and good morning. Happy Friday, Mike Broomhead.
Absolutely. I can't think of it. I love it when you say it.
Happy Friday. Let's say it again.
Big plans this weekend?
Today, you know what? Today, I got to say happy birthday to my dad.
Oh, nice.
Today is his birthday.
Well,
so we're actually going to go do something after work today.
That is awesome. Good for you.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. Well, I hope you have a great weekend. Thank you. Tell him happy birthday from us here on the show.
I will.
All right, here we go. Let's roll into our Friday. So much happening to talk about. We're going to start off talking about what happened in Israel. Well, actually, it happened in Iran, but it was the Israelis and the fallout from this, possibly. The response from Israel in the attacks against them, where over 200 missiles were fired in their direction, missiles and drones. With the help of the Jordanians and the U.S., they were able to intercept 99% of those, of the ones that made it into Israeli airspace, not the ones that failed to launch and ended up falling into the sea or falling in somewhere else in the Middle East. But what this sends a lot of messages. Iran was not able to, and as a matter of fact, the head of the CIA said that it was a failure on Iran's part. The message this sends, because the Iranians talk a big game around the world, and are they able to back it up? Nobody wants to find out. Nobody's looking for a war. But if the Iranians are funding a lot of, and I would say most of what you see in the uprising against the Israelis, and this isn't just me talking about this, and the reason why I keep talking about this, let me step aside for a moment. This is important on a number of levels. Our biggest and most staunch ally in the region by far is Israel. They have a right to exist. We have defended them. They have been on our side in the Middle East. But as much as anything else, if you look at how oil rich the region is, if you look at what instability in the region would do, even the Saudis have said that Israel has a right to exist and that Iran is trying to disrupt any chance at normalcy and peace in the region. And that is obviously something we've been talking about for a long time. Their goal, and this is not the Iranian people. As a matter of fact, the crown prince of the deposed crown prince from Iran says it's this regime. It's the Ayatollahs and the theocracy that has twisted an ideology and twisted a religious view into being anti-Israel that's been bought into by so many people, far too many people. But their existence depends on this Iranian money. The Iranians are a lot more likely to take their money that they are getting from the rest of the world, whether they're earning it through business trades or it's given to them in some kind of relief deal, whatever it is. They're taking that money and they're turning it into weaponry and they're turning it into terrorism. It's not me saying it. This is other world leaders saying it. And this is what's been happening for a long time. But what do those organizations do, understanding that when they rise up and they fire at U.S. assets as this war between Israel and Hamas was going on, that they were attacking American interests, and then America was then responding when Iran did not have the possibility and wasn't able to respond on their behalf? What does it say? What message does it send in the region? And I think it's an excellent question, because what will these organizations do if they have this feeling that Israel has far outpaced them when it comes to the capabilities militarily and protecting itself with an Iron Dome, with assistance, but with the Iron Dome? And if the Israelis are able to strike inside Iran and Iran is not able to stop it. And so the propaganda can get within the country, and they can do that in Iran with propaganda and their people, control of social media, control of the news and all of those things. But in the end, what does it say to the organizations that are beholden to Iran if they don't believe that they're going to have that defense? And that's where I think a big part of this message is being sent. What now does Israel do in an effort to end the war with Hamas? Are they going to push now further south in Gaza and finish that off? What about hostage releases? Nobody even knows if or how many hostages are still alive to be released. Can it be a bargaining chip for Hamas anymore? Hezbollah has continued its attacks in northern Israel, and Hezbollah also had a couple of its leaders taken out by Israeli munitions. And so I wouldn't say this is a victory lap for Israel necessarily, but it does send a message that for all the saber rattling that Iran has been doing for years, and if you remember for a long time, they were saying that they were going to take out the U.S., They had taken American sailors. If you remember that there was an American ship that went into Iranian waters. Not only did they board that ship and take American sailors hostage or prisoner, they took them out of their uniform, stripped them down, humiliated them, put them on videotape and released a videotape for the world to see, breaking all the rules of war. And they have used their aircraft to harass ships at sea, American ships at sea, and instigating trouble. Is this a sign that they are far behind where they say they are militarily in their capabilities? What happens if, you know, the Chinese and the U.S. get dragged in that direction? I don't think that that's going to happen, and I'll explain why. That when nations are prosperous, you don't want war. The Chinese government, the Chinese economy is starting to climb out of the problems that it was having post-COVID, that we know that the shutdowns are the largest port of the world and a lot of the things that happen in the Chinese economy. The U.S. has got a strong jobs market, but we have to deal with, and we're going to talk about in a few minutes about the deficit spending the U.S. is doing, what our plan was that got us in the place we are, but the continued conversation. But I don't think those nations want to spend the money that it's going to take and eyes off the economy on war. I don't think that that's what's going to happen. But in this region, how much longer are we going to see either a back off and regrouping? Because I don't think the Iranians are ever going to stop. But do they back off and try to regroup? Do they try to arm themselves more properly now, knowing that in the last two attacks we've seen, one from Iran on Israel and then vice versa, that the Israelis seem to be far more advanced and far more capable? Do they retreat and regroup and try to become stronger? Or do we see a Hail Mary from them where they try to do something huge? And I don't know the answer, and I don't know that the world does either. And we all should be concerned about this. You watch oil prices and watch what's happened to our stock market. You watch what happens with the price of oil around the world in the days before this. When the Iranians were getting ready to attack, we were seeing a spike in oil prices. When the Israelis were talking about a response, but nobody knew what that response was going to be, people were concerned that this was going to affect the worldwide economy, which, as you can see, the Israelis are pretty smart about that. They saw that the world is already lining up and upset about what's happening in Gaza, which I think is wrongheaded. I think the Israelis have a right to defend themselves. But what the problem is, in my opinion, the problem with this is that the Israelis have a right to defend themselves. If you still go back to October 7th, go back to 2005, go back to when the Israelis pulled completely out of Gaza and it was turned over to the Palestinian people. The Palestinian people elected Hamas to be the governing body. They elected Hamas. Hamas leaders are multi-billionaires squirreling away money. And when the money they do spend is not spent on infrastructure, if you look above ground at the way the Palestinians live, it is not a good economy. It is not a good situation. And they're not improving their lives with infrastructure. As a matter of fact, they're using the infrastructure underground, digging tunnels, creating bombs and munitions to attack Israel. Why are they doing that? Well, obviously, it's their ideology backed by the Iranian ideology. How long can that continue? Because on October 7th, there was peace on October 6th. On October 7th, a war was waged against Israel, not against the Israeli military, against Israel. So when you say this war in Gaza and the Palestinian people, the war from the Israelis has been against Hamas, not the Palestinian people. The talk of aid, the talk of food, all of that going in, the Israelis have been saying all along, and it's been backed up by a lot of independent reports, that they have aid pouring into the country, but it's turned over to the hands of Hamas, and Hamas is supposed to be distributing it, and they're not. They're not doing it appropriately. Once again, Egypt is not opening its doors to refugees in the south of Gaza and the north of Egypt to allow innocent people to have refuge while the war wages on. Neither are the Arab nations. They're not taking in Palestinian refugees. So this blame on Israel is a false one. They are waging a war specifically against Hamas. That doesn't mean that there aren't civilian casualties. There are, unfortunately, as a part of war. But there was no such thing as a civilian on October 7th. On October 7th, it was kill Israelis. Kill Israelis. there was a protest at Columbia University that was broken up. It was broken up by the police there. And Ilhan Omar's daughter was suspended from campus for her behavior. And I believe it was Omar who was laughed at in Congress because she said that the protests at Columbia University were not anti-Jew when the chants were F the Jews. So it kind of gives you an idea of the mindset and what's gone on. I just wanted to update because this was the big news overnight and what happened. It is my hope that this will be the end of a full-scale attack. The Israelis can focus on what they need to do with Hamas and we can get back to some kind of peace in the region. Let's hope Hezbollah stays out of this. Let's hope the Houthis stop their shooting in the Red Sea. We get back to commerce and trade the way it's supposed to be. That is a goal for everyone. I think everyone is hopeful that that's going to happen. In a moment, another organization talking about U.S. deficit spending. We've heard from the Congressional Budget Office. We've heard from the Fed and Jerome Powell. We have heard from barons of business in the U.S., and now the International Monetary Fund is talking about the disastrous spending in the U.S. We're going to get to that coming up here in just a couple of moments.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Ain't that the truth? Thanks for being here. Happy Friday. Hope it's your final day of the work week, just like it is ours. Behind the IMF's warning to Biden and Congress on deficit spending. This has become a serious issue, and a lot of it has to do with planning. Just to be perfectly clear, we understand a lot of the deficit spending that happened was during COVID, during the presidency of Donald Trump. The plan from the U.S., and it was accelerated during the Biden administration. There were different ways of handling the economies of the world and COVID. And the United States' plan was to make sure that the money was fed to the American people and American businesses to keep families and businesses afloat. And then on the backside of COVID, we would be able to then hit the ground running with our economy. Our jobs market has remained strong. It still remains strong. Consumer spending is still higher than expected. We have seen high inflation, which is the part of borrowing and printing money. They can blame it on all these other things they want to, profiteering or otherwise. But we all understand that what ends up happening when you print money and you borrow money is inflation increases. It's not me saying it. Go back generations. That's what happens. So they understand the causes of it. The Biden administration said we are going to have transitory inflation. Now, whether they were very mistaken and believed it or they didn't believe it, but for political reasons said it, it doesn't matter. They were wrong. And so now we are still faced with very sticky inflation, but we are still deficit spending. More than anything else, that's a huge problem. So if you go back to people that normally don't weigh in on it, now there are the usual suspects. The Congressional Budget Office came out and they are a nonpartisan organization. And they said, this is, you are on an unsustainable path. But then you had Jerome Powell, the head of the Fed, who said, we don't normally weigh in on policy. We stay away from policy. But this is an unsustainable fiscal path that the U.S. is on. You've had barons of business, the former CEO of Home Depot and others who have said from a business perspective, you cannot sustain this kind of deficit spending. And every one of those business people understand that there are times that they went into debt to grow and expand their business. They have purchased areas, they have hired, they have built new locations, they have made big investments with borrowed money, but they know that long term, you can't live on borrowed money and piling and piling and piling debt is a bad idea. These are people that have spent billions and billions of dollars building businesses and understand the balance. And I'm certainly not saying it's a good thing to have debt, but they understand the balance of what reasonable debt is in order to grow. You create the debt. By taking borrowing money, you create debt to get yourself financially in another place, whether it's a new division or a purchase of something you already have. And then what you do is you use the profits in the next 5 to 10 years to pay down that debt. And the income continues to come in. And in 10 years, your business is much stronger than it was 10 years before, even though for that one time you created a bunch of debt. Very simple. Now you've got the International Monetary Fund, the IMF. President Biden insists that he is committed to cutting federal deficits. The IMF doesn't seem convinced he'll go far enough. The reason why it matters, Inside the IMF semiannual fiscal monitor report, there's a direct warning to the White House and Congress: check your deficit spending. In the dry language of these economists, the IMF is sounding the alarm that large fiscal slippage in the U.S. and the effect continued deficit spending will have on the overall public debt. China also comes in for criticism. They have been criticized as well. And this is where it isn't just Joe Biden, it's Congress as well. The idea that we are going to continue to spend like we are, the fight should be about where we cut. That always should be the case. I like the battle Republican versus Democrat. I am obviously a conservative Republican, a fiscally conservative Republican. In my core, I believe that we should be as small a government as possible, lean and mean, and unleashing the power of the American business. I think the American entrepreneur, whether it's somebody in a work truck working or the person they work for or a big, huge company, it doesn't matter. We are better off with the government out of the way, with regulation as much as possible and taxation as much as possible. That's my core belief. I also understand that there are people that are completely on the opposite side of the table from me, and that's where the fiscal battle should be raging. Everyone should be in agreement that the U.S. is spending way too much money. The old adage about do we have an income problem or a spending problem? It is obvious we have a spending problem. The United States Treasury and the IRS takes in more than enough money for the United States to do its business. There is redundancy. There is waste. There is loss that can't be accounted for. COVID, when you look at what we did during COVID, we can fight until we're blue in the face about what the right thing to do was. It's done. It happened. Should we have shut down the business we did? Was the PPP loan program the right way to go? Should we have sent stimulus checks out to all of those people? All of those questions are good things for in the future of how do we handle a pandemic or another worldwide crisis. That's a great argument to have, but we have to deal with what happened. The fraud from the PPP loans, where we saw a lot of money go overseas that the U.S. will never get back. We will never see that money again. But what we did in printing and borrowing money and how we're paying a price now, you couldn't do it in your house. This is the frustrating thing for me on this. If you're driving down the right road right now, you're on your way into the office. If you're driving around in a work truck or you're selling something and you're a salesperson in your own personal economy, whether it's the business you work for or own, or it's your own household, if you had an emergency and you had to create a bunch of debt, and unfortunately families go through it, there's some kind of a disaster at your house, a flood or a fire, you have a big loss of equipment, a transmission in your vehicle, an air conditioner at your home, God forbid a medical issue where all of a sudden medical bills go through the roof, but thank God when you're on the other side of it and someone's recovering from whatever illness they had, you look at your financial situation and say, now we've got to tighten the belt. Now we have to make some hard decisions, because if we don't, keeping this debt and creating more of it is going to be a disaster, and we're going to find ourselves underwater. And we're not seeing that. And everyone is saying it. We are not seeing it from the people that we've elected to handle our money. And now you've got the IMF warning. At what point do we hold both parties responsible for this deficit spending? And when do we demand that they get their fiscal house in order? It's going to take us demanding it to make it happen. All right, coming up in a moment, Gatos joins me as he does each day. It's called the Big Q Poll Question of the Day. It happens next.
The Gatos Big Q Poll Question, brought to you by your Valley Toyota dealers.
Hey, happy Friday, Gatos.
Oh, I love your pictures on Instagram, your big Taylor Swift party last night, midnight. Love it. That was fantastic.
You know what? Not only is that not true, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, for crying out loud. You don't know that a double album came out, midnight, everybody's talking about it. Is there a Travis Kelce song? Come on, man.
No, I honestly had no idea.
Oh, geez. What are we going to do with you?
Did you buy the album?
No, I haven't listened to it yet. I'm sure our kids are. My wife loves her. She's going to be listening to the album. But I thought we were friends, man. I mean, you didn't even invite me last night.
Listen, I think the last double album that I bought, just to give you an idea of how old I am, was a real record, and it was Queen Live Killers. I think that was the last double album I purchased.
So the last, I looked it up because you know, people waited for Taylor Swift's songs to come out. The last double album I bought, September 1991.
Okay.
I'm a freshman, Syracuse University, and Guns N' Roses comes out with Use Your Illusion 1 and Use Your Illusion 2. And I remember leaving the dorm and walking and going and purchasing it at a record store and got the albums, went back to the dorm and we played it. So kind of cool.
Yeah.
Kind of cool to think back. That was a long time ago. But
Kiss Alive 2 was one I had when I was a kid. Queen Life Killers.
Yeah, I thought you were more of a Barry Manilow type of guy.
I liked Barry Manilow very much.
Oh, jeez. All right. Gosh, man.
You want to hear? This will make you laugh about me. My buddy Kevin is getting ready to have a birthday. I tell a lot of Kevin stories on the air. My buddy Kevin is a year older than me. He's getting ready to turn 58 on May 6th. And I remember for his 12th birthday, I got him. I got him. The Rod Stewart "Do You Think I'm Sexy" album for his birthday.
Oh gosh! Oh jeez!
We still laugh about that to this day. That was his birthday gift
as a joke, or you actually?
No, we were. I had to go to his birthday party and get him a gift, so I got him that record. And then I didn't realize how creepy it was until we were older.
Oh, that is super creepy.
Yes, it is.
Oh my gosh!
All right, what's the question?
It's not about Taylor Swift.
Okay.
It's much, much more serious.
Okay.
Do you support Israel carrying out a strike inside of Iran?
Yes.
Yes or no? Yeah. Yeah, I think so, too. Yes. You can't let Iran hurl 400 missiles and drones at you and sit there and do nothing. And so, yeah, I'm all for it. And it's scary that I'm all for it because I hope a war doesn't break out, but I think they had to do it.
I have an email I've got to forward you from a friend of mine that is got a lot of respect for you and your thoughts on Israel. And he is connected very deeply with Israel. And it's an invitation to an event. And I'm going to forward you that as soon as we get done.
I'm all for Israel, man. You know that.
I do know it.
All right.
All right, man. Have a good weekend.
All right. See ya.
All right. The BQ poll question today is brought to you by your Valley Toyota dealers. Coming up, we're going to talk about schools and ESAs.